This is the Indie Dads Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Malcolm.
And we're a couple of dads sharing our journey about bootstrapping our indie businesses while still prioritizing our young families. We believe that you can hustle and work hard to build a successful SaaS, freelance, or indie business while still being family first.
Join us as we share our learnings from building our businesses from scratch. Welcome to episode five. Is it episode five, Brian?
Yeah, episode five.
Remind me. Wow, we're on the fifth episode already. That's crazy. It feels like we just started yesterday and we only do these every 2 weeks and we're on episode five already. So it just shows you how time is flying. So you had an interesting time over the last 2 weeks, right? You want to fill us in a little bit of how that went?
Yeah, I've got almost nothing to report, which I actually don't think is a bad thing because, you know, as far as like startups and SaaS and stuff like that goes, took pretty close to the last 2 weeks off. I took my family on a cruise that we've been planning for years. I kind of talked about it last episode a little bit. We flew over to Orlando and, you get tested a few days before because everyone that goes on these cruises these days has to be vaccinated and negative. And that went according to plan, but we were still holding our breath. You pull into the parking garage at the port there and you take one last test and we were, biting our fingernails, waiting for the results, and they came in and we're all good to go. So that was exciting. We got on the ship, spent a day at sea and 2 days at an island that Disney owns called Castaway Key, which is super fun. Just kind of hanging out on the beach, nice clear water. We fed the stingrays and just kind of played around there and came back. So it's pretty quick. And then our original cruise was meant to be longer, but Disney shortened it because of CDC rules. And so we took the money we saved from those extra cruise days and we stuck around Orlando. We actually went to Universal Studios for a couple of days, which is where Harry Potter World is.
Nice.
I've got some bookworms in the family and my daughter reads, I swear it's like a book a day, but the thing that got her started was Harry Potter. So we all went there and had a blast for a couple of days and came back. So been back for a couple of days, but it's all been kind of a blur as we kind of get back into the flow of things. And I took your advice. You know, you were pushing me not to take my laptop and I was
going to ask you about that. That's awesome.
Oh, it was so hard. But I did. And I took an iPad even for like movies on the way there, which my daughter watched.
Yeah.
But I forced myself to not think about other things and just enjoy the moment with the family.
And that's super hard to do, right? To like forcibly remove yourself, because normally when you're busy building a product, you know, during the day at supper time, you're always thinking about the next feature or how am I going to market it? And so to take a 2 week break, I mean, to be completely honest, I think we had two conversations about taking the laptop where I was trying to encourage you to leave it at home. And you were like, no, I think I'll take it with. And I thought, okay, well, I'm fighting a lost cause here. So I'm pleasantly surprised to hear that you left it home. Well done.
I need to do it more often. I think it's probably a good idea. It's probably a healthy thing to do the same with my phone too, you know, just turn everything off for a weekend every once in a while or, you know, something along those lines. It felt good and it was good. And, you know, the family grew closer together. My daughter, who is 10, actually just fell apart in tears on the way off the cruise ship. Cause she was so sad to leave. She had so much fun, which is sad, but also made me feel really good that she had so much fun that she just, couldn't bear to leave it behind. So we had a lot of fun as a family. It was really good. It was kind of a once in a lifetime thing. I don't know if we'll ever be able to do that again, but it was worth it.
Yeah, that's super important, building in those memories with your family. I mean, startup products and work and, you know, we talked about rubber balls and glass balls, you know, those things will come and go. But your kids are only young once and building in those memories with them, that's time you don't get back. And you don't necessarily have to go on a Disney cruise. What we do is my in-laws have a small beach house like 2 hours away. And there I'm forced not to take my laptop because there's no internet reception or anything like that there. So that's always a really good like week long weekend away where, you know, it's small and cramped and there's no electronic support, so you don't take any, but you end up, you know, there's not really even any television. So you're kind of forced to play board games and go for a walk on the beach. And we have ice cream at least twice a day, I think, which the kids really like.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, even something as simple as camping could do the same thing.
Yeah.
So what about you? What did you spend your time doing over the past 2 weeks?
It's quite interesting because coincidentally, my kids were on vacation last week. And also, for side project work, I target between 30 and 40 hours in the month. And I think towards the middle of last week, I'd already hit the upper band of that. So I have this personal philosophy is if I hit the upper band of that, then that's my indicator that I've spent too much time on work and need to take some time away. So that was nice and coincidental because normally how the routine works is my wife gets up super early to take the kids to school. And so here by 9:30, 10 in the evening, she's quite tired. So that's quite convenient for me. She goes to bed and then I start work. But she gets up later, which means she's keen to carry on communicating till late hours of the night. And the kids don't have a real curfew that time either. So we're watching movies and stuff, which means naturally I'm working less. So, and it was, you know, I felt 100% fine with that because I'd already put in the work. And so it was a very nice timing going on there. But yeah, so remote time wise, I did ship quite a big release. Not, I guess it features as well, but the main thing was, I think I talked a little bit about this last time out. As I was adding some new features to the landing page where you could see your tasks for the day grouped by client that you're working on. And the major feature there was now you could see how many total hours you're working for the client. So if you're working on 3 or 4 different clients, you can see like total of 3 hours and total of 5 hours for each client or whatever, which you couldn't really do easily in the previous version of the app. But what I did do was I knew that's the feature I wanted to add, and I was building it and I wasn't, you know, getting warm, fuzzy feelings about the user experience. So this is where good friends and your network comes in handy. I've got a friend of mine who's a user experience designer, and man, you know, like something that would have taken me days to try and experiment with, he just took 20 minutes and came up with a design that was super cool and really easy for me to implement. So so that new design shipped, I think it was last week, Wednesday sometime. So I'm super happy about that. It just every time I open the app in the morning, it's like, oh man, this looks so cool.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, you mentioned last time that the new design and the UX feedback that you got really energized you and gave you some energy to keep working on it and to push hard on getting those changes in there. So yeah, that's always a positive and a plus. In addition to the energy that you got, was there something else related to this change that helped you kind of move the needle to push this forward? Why, in other words, why did you make the choice to work on this as opposed to some of the other marketing efforts that you've mentioned in the past?
Yeah. So like my primary driver at the moment is to get off of Excel, which is like I've already gotten rid of the invoicing tool that I was using many moons ago because remote time's been doing that for a while. And I work mainly for one client. So that has never really been an issue for me. I've been able to log tasks and see how much time I've done in a day and with a couple of easy clicks invoicing at the end of the billing period. But I still keep Excel record logs of my side project stuff that I do on remote time. And the reason why I did that was because I wanted to see that I'd worked 8 hours in the day for my main client. And if I added side project time in the day, then I'd have to do some math and like, okay, how many hours have I worked today for the actual billable stuff? So with this new change, that's the big change for me and hopefully for any other freelancers that are using it. It's just like, I don't need to do that anymore. I can see I've worked 2 hours on remote time and 8 hours on my main client, which is the billable time I need to put in. So that's making a big feature difference.
So it was more than it was more than just a fresh coat of paint. In other words, it was also some new features or reworking of how it worked in order to get those features that you wanted.
Exactly. But you hit the nail on the head there, though. It's just as well working on features, but I've got to get more customers out. So that's the other thing that I've been like, I think the bit of time off has helped me to step back a bit and think about the marketing angle. And I may have swung the pendulum a little bit too far in terms of community involvement. And I was just thinking about practically how well does that scale? How well does that top of the funnel activity translate into actual sales? And I think with the amount of hours that I'm putting in or that I'm able to put in, how long is it going to be before I get traction there? And the answer is probably a very long time. So that kind of just forced me to think a little less one-dimensionally about just being involved in communities. So the other two aspects which I think I've now become a little bit more of a priority is first and foremost, talk to customers. Like talk to actual people. And if you don't know how to get hold of them, then do high touch sales and find a freelancer on LinkedIn or whatever. Or even for me, the first step is always talking to freelancers that I know who are developer friends and say, listen, just walk through this app and give me feedback. And then the second, so that's going to help me with knowing what I've built is of value and validation and that kind of thing. And then as far as user acquisition goes, I think SEO has become a lot more important to me than actual kind of general community time. So that means a better website that better communicates my value proposition. And you grilled me last episode on what is your value proposition. So that's like a step to do before doing the website. So I've got to give some thought on what is, how do I communicate simply what remote time does and what it is going to do in the future? Like what is the ethos of it? As well as, you know, because normally we as developers, we think in features. But what problems am I solving and where am I going long term? Right. Because I think that mission is also so that anybody who's buying into remote time will know long term where you're going and what philosophy you have in terms of, you know, your privacy and how much remote time will enable or disable micromanagement in freelancing world and that kind of thing and communication. So I'm going to give some thought on how to communicate that better.
Okay. And this is easy for me to say because I'm not you. I'm not the one trying to market it. But listening to a bunch of different podcasts, and I don't remember if it was on the Default Alive podcast or Everything is Marketing, but Corey Haynes, who does a lot of marketing podcasts and episodes. So he's kind of everywhere. And one of the things that he mentioned was marketing is – we often look for the silver bullet or the one thing that we can do, whether it's SEO or this or that, community involvement. And it's more like a snowball than a, you know, one thing that works. And in fact, it's a good thing if you can find a combination of things that work, because then you're not putting all your eggs in one basket. So yeah. I like the idea of, it sounded like you were saying that you weren't going to necessarily stop the community involvement, but maybe dial it back because that's more of a long game. And then you're going to look at some of the other things in combination with that. And then all of them together will start to build this snowball or this combination marketing effect over time.
Yeah, so I'm not going to stop being involved. I think what I have done is of the five or six communities that I was looking at, only one was really very directly related to freelancing. All the other ones are SaaS and entrepreneurship and that kind of thing. So what I did do over the last week was shift a little bit more into the freelancing community, answering some questions and posts there. But exactly right. So being a little bit more diverse in the channels, and then also what that does in my mind is exposes marketing channels that can potentially be a lot more scalable. So SEO is something that you it's a lot of investment up front, but once you've got that website up there and it communicates your value proposition really well, then I think that's like building a product and leaving it out there. And if it's discoverable, then that will generate some brand awareness without you actually having to put in time necessarily every week, you know, day in and day out. So I need to have some sort of element that works when I'm not working on the marketing side as well.
Mm-hmm. Cool. You know, I could talk, by the way, a little bit more about what I've been working on in the past few weeks that I was a little bit not super transparent with what I was working on because I was still figuring it out. So the way that this happened was, as I mentioned last episode, I was sitting in MicroConf thinking about how I was going to go about marketing, like we've been talking about, and selling and getting these ideas that I could actually get some traction with. And I came to the realization that I just can't do this alone. Some people can. I just don't think I can. Let me back up. I think I could with enough time. I'm just not patient enough, I suppose. We can all figure it out with enough time and patience. I was like, I only have a limited amount of time. If I can help it, I don't want to go back to a 9-to-5. So I need to find someone that I can partner up with. I reached out to a friend of mine who I actually started something with about, I think it was like 15 years ago. And that was actually a group of three guys that were sales and marketing focused, and they didn't have a tech guy. And so they put an ad in Craigslist. And this was back when I was doing a lot more side projects and freelance work. And so I was always keeping an eye on Craigslist. And I thought, well, this is curious. They want a technical co-founder. So I reached out and we met and we came up with an idea, which was kind of like Craigslist for universities. Because when everybody moves out, at the end of the year, they end up leaving so much stuff behind in their dorms and stuff like that. And we thought, well, we can give them a better Craigslist geared towards universities. And that ended up being a decent idea that went nowhere. So we all went our separate ways. I built it. We just couldn't sell it. We went our separate ways. But I kept in touch with these guys, my friends, three other guys over the years. And here and there, we tried pairing up to build different ideas, and nothing really took off. So just kind of let that go, went my way down the kind of corporate path of software engineering until we got to where I was a few months ago at Amazon when I quit. And anyway, I reached out to my friend Greg and said, hey, how are things going? I knew that about 5 years before this year, or 5 years ago, he had started a business basically doing lead generation. So he's a licensed realtor, very successful, flipping houses. Typically, he, as opposed to being a realtor that would represent you when you sell your house, he was more like a real estate investor where he would buy and flip houses. Yeah. And he figured out how to do some basic AdWords kind of campaigns and get leads. And he was pretty successful on his own. And he figured, I can take what I've learned and I could basically turn this into a productized service selling leads to real estate investors.
Nice.
And so he started doing that. And he's been kind of doing that for the past 5 years. Some success, some failures, some issues, here and there. But he's not a tech guy. He's a business guy. He's a real estate investor, right? So he's glued the system together, like I said, with bubblegum and duct tape, using Zapier and HubSpot and a couple different things, not really totally knowing what he's doing, but doing the best he could with what he had. And he got the system going to the point where he's now able to pay for himself, plus some help on the side. And he's kind of reached the point where he can't go any further on his own. So I reached out, happened to be good timing. He's like, I just can't do this anymore. I need someone who can figure out how all these pieces really should fit together and scale this thing, because he's figured out a model. He just can't scale it. Well, that's what I do, right? That's systemize. I build things. I can take all the data that he's collected over the years and turn it into a system, basically a loop like a closed loop. Because the other thing that is different about what he does is most lead generation agencies or apps out there will do a bunch of lead generation. They'll put a bunch of Google ads and they'll collect leads and then they'll sell them in bulk to whoever is the highest bidder or whatever. What he does is a little different. They pay him, they give him some money to spend on ads. He collects those, or he puts those ads out there, collects the leads, and then works directly with the real estate investor to see if those leads ended up making them money or not. And then for the ones that do make them money, he figures out why, what worked, and doubles down on those efforts. And so it's a self-reinforcing loop where he just gets better and better at selling it. So he's got some really happy clients that are able to basically triple or quadruple their money. So it's a money printing machine. He just doesn't have a system. And there's so much opportunity with how he could optimize in a technical way in order to basically turn this into a lead generation machine, automated machine, as opposed to a productized service, which he didn't realize that's what he had. You know, in his mind, it was kind of like he was just doing it one-off. But when I explained, this is a productized service, this is a pretty common business model. Yes. You just need to now turn it into a SaaS. And so that's what I've been working with him on. So, you know, he's been working on this for 5 years. I don't want to come in with guns ablaze like I can save the world and say, hey, give me half your company. I'm gonna turn this into a SaaS for you. That wouldn't be fair to him. And also, if I were in his place, I wouldn't trust me, even though we're friends for years now, coming in and saying, I can do this for you. So I'm working right now for the next, I'd say, 3 weeks on building a prototype of the system, this closed loop that will help him measure, you know, which leads were generated in what ways and what worked and what didn't, so that he can both show that to his current clients, make them happier, get more referrals, and also get more clients. And then we can kind of turn this into a kind of a lead generation, like I said, machine, I suppose. So that's what I'm working on.
Yeah. I have a few questions for you, Brian. So initially, you know, when you're thinking about, and we talked in detail about this last episode, but when you're thinking, do I go it alone or do I get a co-founder? Normally the thought process is, well, I can go alone, but my target that I have to reach, say $10,000 MRR, that's like a target to hit. As soon as you get more than one person in, you're kind of like, every time an additional person comes in, you need an additional $10,000 MRR. So you're moving the target down. So it sounds like what you've kind of hit a little bit of a unique situation here where there's already revenue coming in. So did that play into your, like, encourage you to kind of jump ship onto that kind of thinking? Or were you already thinking that even before you knew what Greg's situation was?
No, I was ready to start from zero with someone that was as interested and passionate about it as me, so, you know, with nothing but an idea. But this situation is nice because Greg has figured out a model that works. He hasn't been able to make it work seamlessly or on its own, but he knows all the pieces, right? And to the point where he's making enough revenue to support himself. And so it's enough to prove to me that he actually has a working model. And now what I've been doing is actually, instead of going, hey, I can solve this for you, I know everything, which is obviously not true. I've just been attending their meetings. They have calls with their clients, calls with their vendors, as they're trying to figure this stuff out. And I've just been listening to what the problems are and seeing where their biggest gaps are. And that's kind of what my expertise is. So he comes in as a subject matter expert in the real estate investor world. And I come in as an expert in the technical side and turning processes into systems and scalability, building teams and all that stuff. And so it feels too good to be true, which is why I hesitated to say anything before now. And that's why we're kind of doing this as a pilot. But, you know, he's been struggling with this for 5 years. Struggling is maybe a strong word. He's been figuring it out for 5 years. So there's definitely a lot of grit there. And have a huge amount of respect for that. So we're going to see where this goes. But I think that's what I'll be working on and reporting back on, in the next few weeks.
Yeah. So, the other question that I would have there is you're investing a significant amount of time and resources in terms of going in that direction. Mm-hmm. When is the appropriate time? Because it doesn't sound like you've really had that conversation yet. Maybe you have on equity splits and what kind of, because if you put in like 3 months work and you're scaling his business model, and then all of a sudden he says, well, Brian, you can have 3% of the company and a performance bonus every year, mm-hmm. It's like, when do you foresee that kind of conversation taking place? Is there maybe a middle ground conversation before you talk numbers, or how does that work in your mind?
No, great question, because I do have a limited amount of time and I don't want to spend, like you said, months on something that could turn into a dead end. If I felt like it was going to be a dead end, I'd want to go somewhere else, talk to other people. So what I've decided is I'm going to time box this first phase to see if it'll even work. This thing that I have in mind, this prototype that will help him close the loop and see the full picture of all the data, I think I can get that a really ugly version built in October, so this month. At the end of the month, we'll decide, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to take that and actually make it work? Or are we going to just say, well, this wasn't what we thought it would be. That's okay. We're still friends and go our separate ways. I would say October 31st is the point in time to answer your question where I have to decide, okay, am I going to continue investing, donating essentially free time toward this, or am I going to move on to something else? So I feel like it's a little bit too early to start talking numbers, but we've had unofficial kind of conversations about we're talking about exploring a partnership, not he's going to hire me as CTO or something like that. It's not an employee-employer kind of situation. It's a partnership situation. I don't have numbers, and I'm doing that on purpose. He is as well. We'll see. I guess I'm willing. I guess the best way to put this is I'm willing to spend October to see if this is something I want to spend the next several years working on. And there's no downside for him other than the time he's got to spend with me teaching me and helping me understand everything. So it's an investment for him as well. But worst case scenario, he understands the tech side a little bit better. So I think that two episodes from now, I'll be able to give you a better answer.
Oh, nice. Yeah, because that's always super tricky, right? I mean, I agree with you. It doesn't make sense to talk numbers so early on. But I think to have, and it sounds like you do, to have a good idea of intent, like you're saying, it's very clear to you, this is not an employer-employee situation. And I think, for anybody listening in, going through that process, it's super important to get intent out of the way at the beginning rather than at the end. Because, I mean, I've gone through, when I was pitching my first idea to the company that I was working for, that communication wasn't really very good up front. I thought I was communicating clearly that, I needed X amount of investment in order to make this thing fly over the next 12 months. And then when it came, after what felt like months of talking, having board meetings and talking through the business plan and all of these things, they actually offered a tenth of what I was asking for financially. And they were asking for like twice as much equity. And, if I'd known that from the beginning, then maybe I wouldn't have invested so much time trying to do the VC thing and getting investors. And I would have, gotten a much better start at building the product and talking to customers.
Yeah. There's definitely a layer of risk to this for me. And the good thing and the reason I'm willing to take that risk to some degree is that he's not a stranger off the internet, someone that I know personally for many years.
Yeah, that's important.
And so there's a good amount of trust there. I know he's not going to just, ghost me and leave me high and dry. But money changes things. Money changes people.
For sure.
So you have to cover yourself. And when it comes to the point where, if we do enter into a partnership, there will be there will be a contract, you know, there will be an explicit agreement, because we got to, you know, both for him and for me, you know, we want to make sure that we're both covered there. So we'll see where we go. But for now, it's more of an exploratory thing that I'm really excited about. Lead generation is something that I do have some experience in, but I'm not a subject matter expert in that. So there'll be some learning, which I love. You know, I love to learn about new stuff. But the building part is also super exciting. I just have to stop myself from building before the rocket I really ship. Know what I want. Yeah. I need to make sure that I listen and learn before I build, which is always hard as a builder.
Yeah, that's the tricky thing. We know where it can go like 5 years in the future, and we immediately want to start building that thing. It's much more difficult to build the MVP with one or two features that they need right this second. That only takes a couple months. But maybe that's where your first couple months of doing this full-time is going to bear some fruit, because you've gotten some practice now building things and shipping them. So.
And the really cool thing is he's got customers that love him. Some customers that are frustrated as well, which is actually a good thing, because I get to hear why they're frustrated and what we can fix. And so, you know, I'm this week, ironically, since technically I'm unemployed, I like to pretend that I'm self-employed, but I'm really unemployed. I've had more time spent in meetings as an unemployed guy today than not. So I'm just kind of listening in on Zoom calls and learning and taking notes, and it's been fun. So even though I'm not getting paid a dime yet, it's something that I'm willing to spend some time on, and we'll see where it goes.
Well, if there's nothing else to add. So we did get another email from a listener, which I'm always glad, you know, one is, it feels like coincidence. When you get a second email, then it's like, okay, maybe people are listening in. we got an email from Kyle. He's from Blacksburg, Virginia, and he has a co-founder that's in Jacksonville, Florida. And he wrote us in, and he said he's been married for a little over 6 years. He has three children, four and under. So that's interesting.
Wow.
You know, to having a bunch of little kiddies running around and building products, and he is working full time as well. So he's got a lot to identify with us. And he's working on a product called Removerly, which is interesting. So what that does is it removes people's personal information from the internet, which I think in this day and age, his timing must be pretty good, because there's a whole lot of things going around privacy and your information sharing. So feels like he's in a good space there. So he sent us some advice and challenges that he's been working through. He says, learn how and when you are ultra productive. It's not important the hours that you put in so much as the quality of the hours that you put in. So he admits that he works his side projects quite a lot and doesn't sleep very much. But I think the principle, what he's communicating there is so true. I think when you're overtired, and it kind of ties in with our theme for this episode on taking a break and giving yourself permission to not necessarily be working the whole time. You know, just to make sure that you're getting the hours aren't the only thing, that it's the quality of the time that you're putting in, which is important. And I think also, you know, because when you find you're just chasing the hours, and because I went through about 2 years of that, where I wasn't getting a lot of sleep, and that not only has a knock-on effect in terms of the quality of the work that you're doing, but I would find that on weekends I would be so trashed that I would be sleeping for a couple hours in the afternoon just to catch up, and then obviously that's missing out time with my family. And that's probably the one big regret that I have from that time period, is like, your kids are only small once, you know, they're only this age right now, this second, and then they grow up and they change, and, you know, and having missed those Saturday afternoons when, you know, I was catching some Z's instead of, you know, spending some time outside was probably something I would have changed.
And it's hard because we're doing this for them, right? I mean, you're doing it for location or time or financial independence, really for your family. So there's this constant like struggle between, do I spend time working on this long-term thing for them, or do I spend time with them because they're only going to be young for so long? So there's that constant pull. And like you said, I think it's super important to not feel guilty about taking time away from your side projects. Even if you are doing it for them, taking time away from that to spend time with them while they're young, while you still can.
No, for sure. Super important. And I think it helps to have people in your life that remind you of that. I've mentioned before, I'm very thankful for my wife. She's not interested at all in what I'm doing as a side project. She's primarily interested in how much time am I investing in my family. So she's a very good accountability partner. So get people like that in your life that keep you honest about what you say is important. He goes on to say, find out what works best for you and your co-founder. So Kyle has a co-founder. He's got an interesting case. He said he met his co-founder on a forum and they've only ever talked via Slack. Wow. They've been working on it for 18 months, this product, and they launched 3 months ago. He says he knows it's weird, but it works great for them. Yeah. Kyle, I think you're a bit of a unicorn if you just met someone off the internet and the co-founding relationship is working great. Congratulations on your launch. Please give us some feedback in a couple of months' time to see how that's going. But seems like it's working for him. Slack messages on somebody he doesn't know is building a business with him. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'd be really curious to hear, Kyle, maybe if you're listening, if you write in, let us know as a follow-up, how many partnerships you had before. The current one, and whether they worked out or not, because like we talked about, it feels like dating. And if you truly just found your co-founder on a forum and have only talked over Slack, boy, you hit the lottery, because I feel like that's a really hard thing to make happen.
Yeah, so you do get people who meet a girl, they date for 2 weeks, and they get married, and they're married for 50 years. Like, who can say? But that definitely is the exception to the rule. And congratulations to you, Kyle, if you managed to get that right. He goes on to say about Removerly that there's a lot of players in the niche that they're playing in. Most of them have got funding. So the advice that he has there is there's lots of advantages to being on a small team and a new company in a larger space. So capitalize on those things. So that's the age-old advice of, you're a small company, do the things that don't scale. So, and stereotypically, normally where that happens is customer service. I was just reading today on small companies having a turnaround time of less than 24 hours when their really big competitors take sometimes weeks, sometimes not at all, to get back to their customers, just because they just don't have the capacity, even though they are really big. They've got thousands of customers. So how do they, and especially if their product isn't really that good, they don't really get to them. So that's really look for those things that don't scale where your customer really feels your value proposition. I think that's great advice. So if our listeners heard some elevator music, it's because we had some technical difficulties. So yeah, I was talking about Kyle, and the other thing that he says is to make connections, get yourself out there and help others, and down the road, they may in turn help you. Brian, I believe you're experiencing that at the moment. So help other people, build your network, be open to conversation and feedback, super important. I wish I'd done this earlier. Your users and others looking in have a different perspective than you, and they often have great insight. And then finally, Carl mentions the time that he works is from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. I don't know how you do that, Carl. You mentioned you don't get a lot of sleep. I'm wondering how sustainable that is, but that's what he does at the moment. This is the biggest challenge, is having the time to get things done on top of a full-time job. Carl, you're preaching to the choir, my friend. So much to do, so little time, especially when you're prioritizing family and kids and all of these things. Welcome to to the herd. We're all struggling with that.
That's for sure.
So thanks to Carl for thinking of us and letting us know how things are going. To anyone who's listening, you don't have to have a big rocket ship successful product to write in. Just if you're an indie parent and you're building something on the side, send us an email. Where you're from, the things that you struggle with, the lessons that you've learned, and we can share that with our other listeners.
Yeah.
So, Brian, I think we've come to that part of the episode. I have totally forgotten what the order is, so I'll ask you to go first.
You know, on a cruise, you have, or at least the Disney cruise, I don't know how the other ones work, but you have the same host every night at dinner. When you go to dinner, you sit down, and it's the same person that serves you every night. And so they get to know you. And the guy we had was pretty funny. He was telling us jokes and throwing some dad jokes in there. And my kids were telling him some back. So I was pretty proud of that. And this one comes from my daughter, who I didn't even know. I'd never heard this one before. I didn't know she had such good jokes, but I thought it was pretty funny. So one of the nights on this cruise was pirate night. So everybody dresses up as a pirate if you want. And she had a pirate themed dad joke, which is, how much did it cost the pirate to get their ears pierced? A buccaneer. For hopefully it's well known that a buccaneer is another name for a pirate, but I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, it took me like 500 milliseconds to get it, but I think it's not too much funny of a stretch. So I have a bit of a general knowledge quiz for you, Brian, or more of a did you know. Did you know that all humans are born with four kidneys? Well, when we grow up, two of them become adult knees.
Adult knees. I'm slow today.
Kidneys?
Gosh. I'm super slow. That I get it. That's funny.
The delivery leaves a little bit to be desired, but it was me. I saw that today on one of the times.
I'm having a slow day. So what are you going to be working on between now and next episode?
Yeah, so finally, so I mentioned I shipped a feature this last week. So the next thing that I'm working on is customer time zones. So that is a pet feature of mine. I work with people on the other side of the world, and I never know what time it is there. And it just would be super helpful for me as I'm looking at my tasks to see what time it is in their time zone. So that's a small feature that I'm busy working on. It's going to give me a lot of value so that I don't know I'm not communicating with them out of office hours and that kind of thing.
And we'll get to know what you look like bald, because I'm pretty sure you'll have pulled all your hair out by the time you're done, if you're like me.
Yeah, time zones and dates are always a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's on the feature side. Product side, I'm putting aside some time to talk to at least one person, have a walkthrough of remote time, have them sign up for a subscription, because there's a free trial. They can always cancel later if they'd like to. But just to have that eyes on from, you know, nothing, going through the app and just hearing their comments as they go through it. So just that dip my toe in getting some user feedback and hopefully have some extra steps from there. How about you, Ron? What does your next 2 weeks look like?
Well, right now, all that data that I was talking about, the lead generation data, lives in HubSpot, and a combination of HubSpot and spreadsheets. So I'm going to work on pulling that data down and seeing what I can do with it, how I can connect all the dots. It's all kind of separated right now. So I know that's a little vague, but I'm going to be doing some basically data spelunking to see what I can do. And I'm going to listen in on, let's see, we have about a customer call a day. So between now and then, should be about 10 customer calls. I should have enough to really kind of understand what they're doing, what they need. And so I'll report back on that.
Sweet.
Yeah. All right. Well, then we will see you in a couple weeks.
Yep. Cheers, everyone. If you enjoyed this episode and you want an easy way to support us, we'd love it if you reviewed this podcast on whichever platform you're using to tune in. If you'd like to ask a question, you can send us an email to hello@indiedads.com or message us directly on Twitter. You can also find us at indiedads.com, where you can see show notes, links to our Twitter profiles, and product websites. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.